Joining me now is Scott Reeder, an independent journalist who for 29 years has been covering the murder case of Jennifer Lewis. She was the 9-year-old girl who was raped and strangled to death before her body was set on fire near a Davenport elementary school in 1990. Last week, a jury in Waterloo, Iowa, convicted Stanley Liggins of her murder. It was the fourth trial of Liggins. The first two trials in the 1990s resulted in convictions, but each was overturned. A third trial occurred last year, and that ended in a mistrial. Scott, thank you for joining me.
Great to be here, Ben.
What was it like to be in the courtroom when the verdict came down?
It was a tense atmosphere. I mean, I'm sitting there. I have the victim's mother sitting right in front of me, as well as her godmother. I see the police officers who have worked the case for decades milling around on the other side of the courtroom. Stanley Liggins is sitting there in a suit with the dark glasses on, kind of staring straight ahead. The defense attorneys looked very grim-faced when a jury comes back with a verdict relatively quickly. That's often going against them. The prosecutors looked tense, but I wouldn't say maybe. You could see a little bit of optimism in their gait.
And I understand that Jennifer Lewis's mother and godmother were both in the courtroom. That would be Sherry McCormick, the mother, and Mary Maxwell Rockwell, the godmother. What did they do when they heard the verdict?
Just hugged each other and started weeping and crying and hugging each other. And it was like such a relief for them because they felt that justice was being done for Jennifer.
Did you hear from any of the jurors after the trial?
Yeah, I sure did. One of them sent a message to a mutual friend who passed it on to me. And he was very frustrated. He said that all 12 people on the jury were really nice, good people. And they wanted to do the right thing. And they just sat around that table and just agonized for a day. What is the right thing to do here? And he was upset that he found out after the trial there was a lot of information that was not provided to jurors. One of the things that he said he started listening to suspect convictions right away after the trial. And one of the things he found out was that Stanley Liggins was out on bond for sexually abusing another 9-year-old girl at the time of Jennifer's death. And you know, it was always a mystery to the jurors. Why did the police start focusing on Stanley right away? Well, it's because he was out on bond for sexual abuse. There was a lot of things like in Stanley's background that were never revealed to him, like that he had served 9 years in prison, or 7 years in prison in Mississippi for armed robbery. It never came out that his relationship with Jennifer's parents was he was providing cocaine to them to sell on the west end of Rock Island. There was a lot of things that jurors said that they would wanted to know. And he said, you know, it would have been so much easier to come up with a verdict if we'd known these things. They still found him guilty, but they said it would have been a whole lot easier to have found him guilty if they had known this about his background.
And why did Judge Marlita Grieve decide to withhold that information from these jurors? Because, like you said, it does seem pretty relevant.
Well, that's a good question. I mean, what Judge Grieve said was that it would be so prejudicial that it would overwhelm the jurors and maybe unduly influence them in finding against Stanley Liggins. They wanted them to just find it based on the find a verdict based just on the evidence that regarding the crime itself, not his history, not his background. Now, of course, the prosecution fought very hard to try to bring in his background because they said it constituted a pattern. And I thought it was interesting in the back of the courtroom was the other 9-year-old girl that Stanley had sexually abused. And now, of course, she's in her, in her early 40s now. And she looks so relieved. And, you know, when after the conviction, you know, 20 some years ago. In that case, he allegedly threatened to kill her as soon as he got out of prison. So she was terrified of this poor guy. Of this man. I mean, she was just terrified that he was going to do something to her. So yeah, there was a lot of relief in that courtroom. What struck me as interesting was Stanley Liggins' reaction. I mean, I've been in a lot of courtrooms and seen a lot of verdicts over the last 30 years. He just stared straight ahead. His shoulders didn't sag. He looked totally impassive. I have no idea what was running through his mind whatsoever. One of his attorneys hurried out of the courtroom, the other attorney, a young woman, just started weeping. I mean, she was just so upset that there had been a guilty verdict, and she went out in the hallway and was still bawling. I've never seen an attorney respond to a verdict quite like that. The prosecutors obviously were elated, they'd done a very able job.
Now, it was just last September that another jury could not come to a consensus and the judge declared a mistrial. What do you think made the difference this time around?
I think two things. One, I think that the jury was a different jury, obviously, and the dynamics of juries vary a great deal. The composition, at least superficially, was very similar. I mean, there were seven women on the old jury. There were seven women on this jury. There were three African-Americans on the old jury. There were three African-Americans on this jury. So in those superficial ways, it was very similar. It was a little bit older jury. But you could just tell by their body language watching the trial that they tended to be more in agreement with the prosecution than they were with the defense. But then, you know, at the, I think those things were factors. But I also will say this. I mean, I sat through all the testimony during the last trial. I just came up for the closing arguments for this trial. But I interviewed a lot of people who had sat through everything. And I can tell you this. The prosecution really had their game on last week when they made their closing arguments. They were very strong and really made the case, perhaps better than the last trial, which ended the mistrial. I don't think the information was much different than the last time, but the way in which they presented them was pretty good. They also did some things that I thought were smart. One of them was... you know, since this is a trial 29 years after the fact, a lot of the witnesses are dead. So they had to read the testimony from the previous trials into the record. And that can be very boring and very tedious. And you're having you know, police officers and lawyers and other people doing the reading. These aren't actors. So it's sometimes... you know, you aren't getting all the inflections you might want and everything else. And they came up with this idea this time around that when they are having a reading, they would project the image of the actual person whose testimony was being read. So, you know, when you were, instead of thinking this is being read, this testimony is coming from this attorney who's volunteered to read, it's coming from, you got this image of the neighbor that was looking out and saw Stanley Liggins lurking around the Jennifer's house, or when you had these different things. So it was a very compelling way to present the testimony so many decades after the fact. And I just think that when I listened to Mike Walton and Julie Walton, you know, their brother-sister team prosecuting this, they both seemed much more confident and really went into it this time around, at least with the closing arguments, relaxed and feeling like things were going their way. I mean, it was very evident in their demeanor and everything else.
Now, you've been following this case as long as anyone. You arrived at the scene of the crime in September of 1990. In your opinion, was justice done?
Justice is kind of a murky issue, but I mean, you know, what's justice to one person isn't justice to another. But I can tell you this, listening to this testimony, I think justice was done, and here's why. Jurors got to weigh all of the facts. Now, there's been a number of appeals over the years, and the appellate judges have said, you know, jurors needed to know this, they don't know that. And this time around, the jurors got to hear all those things. And a lot of the ancillary issues, like Stanley Liggins' role as a drug dealer, had been presented in the first trial. I mean, there's been four trials so far on Stanley Liggins over the last 29 years. They didn't hear. And they really whittled it down to just the evidence in this case. I mean, specifically, not any of the ancillary issues, you know, his past criminal history, any of those things. And they presented both sides. The defense had a good opportunity to try to impeach witnesses, talking about their relationship with police. Was like one key witness had been a paid police informant that hadn't been revealed in previous trials. This time around, that was revealed, and the prosecution was able to address it as well. I mean, I think by far it was the fairest trial Stanley Liggins has received. And I think justice was done. I think that there were things to be concerned about in some earlier trials. This time around, I think that jurors tried very hard to come up with a good verdict. I mean, I think there was justice done here.
What's next for Stanley Liggins?
Well, you know, Iowa law mandates that if you're convicted of first-degree murder, you go to prison for the rest of your life. There's no eligibility for parole. Of course, there's no death penalty in Iowa. So in about 3 weeks, he's going to have a sentencing hearing. Now, at the sentencing hearing, it's a formality. We already know how it's going to end. He's going to go to prison for the rest of his life. Now, we may have members of Jennifer's family come forward and read witness victim impact statements about what impact this had on their lives. This is kind of a way of how they like to use the word closure. I don't think victims of crimes ever really reach closure, but it's a way of marking a milestone, you know, telling the world what happened and how it affected their lives. So, yeah, I think that's what's going to happen next. And then Stanley's going to go away to prison for the rest of his life. Of course, he'll appeal. Those appeals will probably go on for many years. You know, I don't look for this case to ever really close altogether until Stanley's passed away. But I think that this is the closest thing we've had to finality in this case for a long time.
Hi, it's Edith Brady Lunny, co-author of The Unforgiven, a new true crime book with a story like no other. The case has some of the markings of the Susan Smith case, the South Carolina mother who drove her car into a lake, drowning her two sons. In this case, I covered as a reporter, it's a boyfriend who's driving the car when it enters an Illinois lake. His girlfriend's three children in the back seat all drown. The adults escape with their lives, but then face the death penalty on murder charges. Then there's an unlikely turn, a marriage, three more children, and another legal battle over who should have custody of the children, the parents or the state. My co-author is Steve Vogel, author of the best-selling true crime classic Reasonable Doubt. Our new book, The Unforgiven, The Untold Story of One Woman's Search for Love and Justice, is available wherever good books are sold. I think you'll find it a very compelling read.